Basically, a big welcome to Sligo's very first election debate. I'm chairing tonight, Alan Maven, or Alan in Belfast, if I was online. Providing Wi-Fi for 200 people really wasn't going to work, so I'm afraid you're going to have to rely on 3G signal. If you have any complaints about that, I suggest you lobby these two individuals who have more power than I have. If you'd like to join in online, the hashtag is EBDebate, for East Belfast Debate. We ask if you would maybe try and refrain from applauding every time a candidate says something you like, mainly because it really slows us down and it would actually kind of cut out a lot of questions during the evening. I'm sure at some point you will actually just kind of burst into spontaneous applause, and that's okay, but if you could kind of just not do it every time somebody says something you agree with, that would be really good. Some of you are probably also here to support particular candidates. Some of you will be here to support other candidates who are not on stage tonight. Some of you don't support any of the candidates. And we're all kind of here to listen. So although we have two, you're all kind of welcome there for that. The candidates are going to be here on stage in the Strand Arts Centre for just over an hour. So we'll have plenty of time to canvass later on before the rain comes. We want to maximise what we hear from them, which is why we've kind of devised the format in the way that we have. If we'd included all six candidates, we would have been here for about 2.5 hours, as we were in Billerfield last night for 5. There are, of course, 6 candidates, and apparently they would all like your vote. And in alphabetical order in East Belfast, they are Ross Brown from the Green Party. We've got Naomi Long from Alliance. We have Mary Muldoon from the SDLP. We have Niall O'Donoghue from Sinn Féin. We have Gavin Robinson from the DUP and Neil Wilson from the Conservatives. I think they all deserve a round of applause at that point. So we're going to hand over to the candidates maybe later on to have a bit of a conversation. We will be drilling them with our panel over here, we'll introduce in a minute. But before all of that, we're going to start by listening to the candidates' opening statements. We have tossed coins, and if I can remember, 5 minutes. I believe that Gavin is going to go first. So Gavin, your 2 minutes start now.
Thank you very much, Alan, and thank you so much everyone for turning out this evening. This has been billed for the last number of weeks as a blockbuster, and I'm glad that we're on the stage here at the Strand Cinema, an iconic building within East Belfast. And I've made that focus because I believe East Belfast is iconic. I love East Belfast. I love the history of East Belfast. I love the people of East Belfast. And having had the opportunity to represent a part of our great constituency in Belfast City Council has not only been joyous, it has been fulfilling and rewarding experience for me. That's why I'm standing for election. I believe some of the things we've been able to do at a local level of council give the drive and the determination to make East Belfast the very best it can be. I share a passion for East Belfast that I believe is unequalled. I want to see our constituency move forward. I want to see our constituency move forward in a way that we can harness the true potential that we have as a people and as a society. There have been many issues over the last number of years, many roadblocks to progress, but now is the time when we can get representation that links in not only here in East Belfast, but at Stormont, in Belfast City Council, at a European level, and in London itself. This opportunity provides us as a people with this election provides us with a unique opportunity for East Belfast and for Northern Ireland as a whole. I want to be a part of a team that will make progress for all of you, make progress for all of those who live in and love East Belfast. And with the help and support of people on the doors, the help and support of people in this constituency, I believe we can make that happen. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you, Gavin. So, Naomi, your 2 minutes.
Well, first of all, can I say thank you to Slugger for organising the hustings tonight, and thank all of you for taking the time out of your evening to come along and listen to what we have to say. East Belfast is a fantastic constituency. It's one that I have lived in my entire life, and it's somewhere that I'm really passionate about. I have been fortunate enough to represent the people of East Belfast over the last 5 years in Westminster, and that has given me the opportunity to raise the issues that matter to people in this constituency, where it can really have an impact on their lives. There has been much good done in the constituency in that time, but I believe there is also much more that we can do. I remember as a child coming to this cinema to watch movies. It then for a while went through other phases, and now we see it as a vibrant arts centre. This is a metaphor for the constituency. It is one in transition, and it is one that is changing, but it is changing for the better, and I think that there are real opportunities. But if we're going to do that, we need to harness that energy, and we need to make sure that we're focused on moving East Belfast forward together. I believe I have the experience in terms of working at all levels of government, whether it's at the Assembly, at Westminster or at the Council, and in terms of the busy constituency service that I provide. I have a passion for East Belfast. I love this constituency. I want to see it change for the better, and I'm passionate about building on its successes. I also have a record of delivery, which I come before the people of East Belfast with, of making manifest and promises, but those are promises that I have kept. Whether it's double jobbing, whether it's party political funding, whether it's opposing Northern Ireland for welfare reform, or whether it is other issues in terms of internationalism, we have dealt with those. But most of all, I come to people with a vision. And that is a vision to take East Belfast forward in a united way and not backwards. And that is my vision for this election.
Thank you.
Okay, with the focus on just the most prominent candidates, the short time frame, and you as a live audience, and I recognise quite a few, kind of handfuls, pocketfuls of people from various parties, questions from the audience would be, A, quite random, but also quite party political in many cases, for the people who would get their hand up first. But tonight we have a panel which kind of gives us a bit of a spread across kind of journalism and newspapers and kind of commentary in Northern Ireland. We've got Alison Morris from the Irish News, we have Sam McBride from the newsletter, and we have Alex Cain, who writes for both of those and many other places, and certainly isn't afraid to express political opinion on all sides. So we'd like to kind of welcome our panel, and they're going to be kind of asking questions on a series of topics. The candidates know roughly what the themes are, but they don't know what the exact questions are going to be. So we're going to have about probably roughly a minute maybe to kind of respond to each question, and then maybe there'll be some kind of challenge back from the panel or from each other to what you've said. Alison, I think you're going to go first. What's your question?
The DUP is fielding all male candidates in the Westminster election. Given how unrepresentative that is, how do you think if only one, two, either candidate think they can do to encourage more women into politics and are in favour of quotas?
Gavin, do you want to go first?
Thanks, Alison. Thanks for the question. And as an incredibly capable journalist who just happens to be a female, I think we need to put in perspective that we don't want to put people forward just because of their gender, but make sure that gender is not a barrier to progress in whatever field of life. And you're right in indicating that we don't have any female candidates in this election. Just as the Alliance Party have proudly told us that they have 100% female representation in their Westminster team, we have 100% representation of females in our European team. We have an equal split within our party officer team of females. We have an incredibly capable female minister in Arlene Foster, incredibly capable chair people within the Northern Ireland Assembly and vice chairs, members of the Assembly and members of the Belfast City Council group that I lead. I think it's important that people who have a passion, who want to get involved in politics, are encouraged to do so irrespective of their gender, and for that reason I'm not in favour of discrimination, whether it's described as positive or not. I want to encourage people, but I don't believe in this.
Naomi, what do you think?
Well, I'll start where Gavin left off and say that I agree with him, because I'm not in favour of quotas in politics, but I am in favour of affirmative action. I do believe that we need to support women to see a role in politics for themselves, and the evidence and the research shows that a lack of representation of women in public life actually dissuades people from getting involved in politics. I think it's hugely important that we motivate women first and foremost to vote, but also to see politics as something that is for them. And I think we can only do that if we actually have a representative sample in the of the population in politics. For me, I think it is, again, I'm not in favour of quotas, but I think you do have to ask the question. If you're standing 16 candidates and you cannot find any of your women, that raises a wider question about why women then are not coming forward in those elections to stand for election. It doesn't mean that you need quotas to redress it, but it does mean that you might need to look at how you go about encouraging women to come forward. I agree also with Gavin that it's not just about the front-facing roles. It's also about changing the culture of politics, and that includes in terms of management structure. And, for example, our own chief executive is a female, and I think that that's an important statement to make within politics in Northern Ireland.
I mean, Alison, you're surprised that the representation is as it is?
I think it shows that maybe unionism, conservative unionism, is a home place to women, or it's not appealing to women. I mean, I'm sexually confident the fact that you couldn't come up with one very capable woman in your party to sound. It seems very strange.
I mean, I wonder if I could just respond to that, Alan.
I think this microphone.
We'll get there.
I listened today, and I think it was a very interesting contribution from Fionnuala Murray on BBC Radio. And Fionnuala, in a previous profession, used to work for an organisation called Women Into Politics. The sole focus of that organisation was to encourage greater participation, and for that, I mean, I agree with their aims and their aspirations. But after all of the years in which she was involved in Women Into Politics, she surmised on the radio today that they failed. That they weren't able to encourage one woman through that programme to get one woman to get into politics. So this isn't just an issue for me or for my party. This is an issue for society generally. There are 6 candidates standing in East Belfast. A third of them are female. I think it would be great if it was half. It would be great if it was representative. And so what I want to do in politics and make sure people can see politics as a progressive profession is to make sure people feel the atmosphere is right to get involved. That they are, as a worker, right to get involved. That people are encouraged, if they have a contribution to make it irrespective of gender.
I mean, Gavin, I end up at your party conference most years, and quite often over lunch, the women get together. Specifically, Michelle McElveen is often involved trying to encourage women through. Is it not practically a failure at this stage that when you had you had 8 MPs who were obviously going to refight their seats, so that's okay. But for the other 8, not to have a single woman going through? I mean, really, your party has failed in its attempt to get women through. It's not that you're not trying, but you're not getting them nominated. You're not getting them, or you are getting them nominated, but you're not actually selecting them.
Well, I think it's an important distinction to make. We have very different tiers of government, very different tiers of elected politics, and having gone through the range of them, I think we need to take it in totality. We have a very vibrant organisation in the DUP called the 1928 Committee. That date is important because that's when women got the franchise within the country. Margaret Thatcher, like her or loathe her, smashed a glass ceiling. There are many who would reflect that she might have smashed the glass ceiling but could have pulled the ladders up behind her because many weren't encouraged to follow forward. I want to encourage people to get into politics. I want people to see politics not in the difficult way or the disingenuous way or the nasty way that sometimes our politics descends into. I want to see politics as an honest profession, as something that contributes a lot to our society. So even when we disagree, even when you have alternative views or you have an alternative way of doing things, recognise that a contribution can be made, and it can be made by everyone in this society.
I mean, Naomi, from an Alliance point of view, if to some extent you have dropped some female candidates into constituencies where they don't live, but you're kind of trying them out somewhere where they stand for a chance of going, is that a positive thing or is that a negative thing?
Well, I think there will be constituencies where it will be an uphill battle, but given that I was 100-1 in this constituency last time around, my odds weren't much better than theirs, and yet you just don't know what the outcome of an election. But we've picked capable people in all those constituencies. That's the important thing. We've picked capable people because we wouldn't stand people to run for election unless we believed that if they were elected to do the job, they'd be capable of doing it. I have always worked in predominantly male environments. I worked as a civil engineer for 10 years before I went into politics. And what drove me into those jobs is not to try and redress a gender imbalance. It was a passion for the issues. And what we need to do if we're going to connect with communities, and if we're going to connect with women, is we need to listen to what their issues are, what the things that make them passionate about politics are, and engage on those issues. But if we're finding that our programmes are not working in terms of developing new candidates, in terms of giving people the confidence to come forward, we need to look at where the flaws are. So, for example, in our own party executive, we noticed that there was underrepresentation of women. The issue wasn't actually that people were not being elected when they stood for office. The issue was that people were not putting their name forward. So we went about the next year talking to people about the potential of running for executive. And what we found was, on each occasion, 100% of the women who stood were elected to executive. But we doubled the number of people who stood. And so you've got to look at what the issue is and then address the issue.
Thanks, Naomi. Sam McBride, you're going to ask the second question.
First, to both of you, it's possible that whichever one of you is elected, you will have a role in deciding who forms the next government. And in broad terms, because public spending really impacts on everything that the government does, the UK's national debt stands at about $1.4 trillion, we're still in a deficit, that debt is getting bigger. My children are going to have to pay for that, the children of the people here are going to have to pay for that. How fast would either of you, like to see that cut with all of the implications that would mean either for taxation or for public services?
Well, I think that there needs to be a proper plan in terms of how we deal with the deficit. I don't believe that the current austerity measures, which essentially are trying to balance the books on the backs of the poorest, are the best way forward. So I think we need a much more balanced programme. I mean, I get quite frustrated when we see welfare reform tackling, for example, those who are most in need, but we see tax giveaways to those who are already high net worth individuals. And I think that that is something that needs to be tackled, is tax justice. So one of the things that I would support, actually, is going after some of the high net worth individuals, also the corporates who evade their taxes in the UK and internationally, to make sure they pay tax where it's due. We need a balanced plan to deal with the deficit, but we also have a bigger threat in Northern Ireland. When we go back to Westminster, we will be dealing with an attack on the Barnett formula, on the grant system that actually funds our services in Northern Ireland. We need to work very carefully with the other regions to ensure that that Barnett formula does not be changed to our disadvantage, because the cuts that we're already experiencing are likely to be much deeper if that happens.
Gavin?
Yeah, thanks very much.
Thanks very much for the question, Sam. I think Naomi and I agree on what it is we should be doing when it comes to balancing the budget and making sure that as a country, whilst we need to consolidate the debt, we need to bring the debt down, the promises that were made in the last 5 years have not been delivered. And I think that is a great regret. Debt has increased indeed, yet people are feeling the burden. That's an issue. We have published our Northern Ireland plan. It's not our manifesto, but it's our document as to what discussions we are going to have with any potential party which is going to form a government. And that's when I talk about this great opportunity for Northern Ireland. We need to be involved in the discussions, but more importantly, we have the opportunity to maximise our influence. That gives everyone in this room and everyone in Northern Ireland the chance to punch well above our weight. That's what we'll be doing as a political party. And we don't have an association. We don't have a relationship with any of those key national parties. We'll be talking to them all. We'll be keen to see what it is they want to do for Northern Ireland and what we can get to benefit Northern Ireland and our society. That'll talk about increased infrastructure, increased spending for public services, ensuring that we can invest in our schools and our hospitals as two key determining factors of those discussions that we're going to have with government. We got the green light there.
I haven't hit the button, but okay, go on, Sam. Do you want to tell me?
Just briefly, both of you. I mean, both of you seem to be in agreement that it needs to be cut. I think that's pretty much common ground with most parties. The issue is how fast it should be cut. And yet, when the government has tried to do some things in order to cut that deficit, whether raising some taxes, making cuts to, for instance, welfare, to the military, to various other aspects of public spending, you've been very critical of the government. So sure, you can't have it both ways. Either you need to balance the books, or the government really take the opposite opinion and have to be upfront with people about that.
Well, I think there are two things. I mean, first of all, when the government proposed cuts to the top level of taxation, I opposed those cuts. So I have actually opposed tax cuts and stood up for the policies that I believe in, which is that those of us who are earning more should contribute more. And I believe that's a basic principle of fair governance. I think if we're going to have a fair and equitable society, we do have to be realistic about what the public sector is able to do. And that means in Northern Ireland looking at the efficiency with which we deliver our services. And unless we deal with things like the inefficiency that comes from segregation and division, we will not be able to cut our cloth from what we get from Westminster, and that is just realism. So I am in favour of us reducing the deficit, but I'm not happy with the means with which the Conservative government have approached it to date, and I'm deeply concerned at the fact that their approach to this is likely to be to speed that process up, to have further deep cuts to public services and welfare, which have a particular impact in Northern Ireland. But I don't think we can argue our way out of it by saying we're different, we're a unique case. We have got to also try to grow our way out of some of those problems by making Northern Ireland an attractive place for investment, by creating alternative employment, and by trying to get people who are capable of work into work and support them in work. I think it has to be a two-pronged approach.
I think, Gavin, you referred to kind of your GDP plan as 45 or 47 points in it. I think, are the deficit ones in there, are they kind of some of your priorities that you just wouldn't do a deal with anybody unless those were there? Or are all of them equal? I mean, once you've got 47 things, it's nearly meaningless. You're just kind of, it's a shopping list of one or two things.
Well, just to clear it up, there's 100 points. 45 are for Westminster, 45 are for Stormont. But download the document. This isn't something to be taken lightly. This is our policy position.
But is the deficit more important than other things?
And I think we have been incredibly clear that there are no red lines in that document for this. In any discussions we have after May the 7th, in any negotiations we have about how best we can take this country forward, it'll be the best deal for Northern Ireland that we can get will be the deciding factor for us.
Okay, Alex Kane. You have a question?
I have a question, yes. Given the particular nature of this contest, how big a role do you think policies on wider issues actually matter to the voters? And the second question, I'm sorry about this, given the growing impression that you two can't actually stand each other, how much of an impact will that personal dimension to the campaign have on both turnout and maybe the result?
Would you like to agree amongst yourselves? It was first one. Naomi, you didn't talk last time. So.
First of all, I think policy takes a back seat in a lot of Northern Ireland elections. Because sadly, and I think particularly in this election, where we have the notion of a unionist pact and other things, it deflects attention away from policy and deflects it towards this kind of idea that people have to get behind one candidate or another to make a statement about wider issues rather than policy. So I think you're right, there is a danger in this election that policy gets lost. However, I believe policy is incredibly important in this election because it is policy that will dictate how we vote when we get to Westminster. And actually the election in many ways is secondary to what you actually deliver when you get to Westminster. I haven't needed to wait for a hung parliament to be able to have influence. I have been able to influence government on a number of issues, on a number of commitments that I've made in terms of my manifesto. And so I think that if you're able to do that in a context where your vote isn't critical, but where your voice is influential, that's important. As to us hating each other, I don't hate Gavin. Let's be very clear about this. I hope Gavin doesn't hate me, but I know I don't hate Gavin. Gavin and I have spoken about this as recently as today, and I think this is a phase of the campaign that really seriously needs to be put behind us for the good of the people of East Belfast. It's playground stuff, and it might entertain the media, but really, it's not the substance of the campaign. It isn't for me, and I'm sure it isn't for Gavin either.
Absolutely right.
Whenever Naomi said there, I'm sure Gavin doesn't hate me either, and I was nodding. I was nodding to agree as opposed to agreeing with her that I do. Alex, I can't see with the lights in this room whether you've actually managed to smile yet or not. You are in political commentary an eternal pessimist. I have to say. Naomi and I have had the opportunity, this is the third occasion in the last 5 days to discuss politics, discuss what matters to you, and yet every time we do that, policy takes the back seat, not because of my position or not because of her position, but because of the questions we are asked. So I don't know what this fascination is, but I'm interested, and whenever we spoke on Thursday night, I indicated that I'm interested in talking about what we can do for the people of East Belfast. And whilst we might disagree most fundamentally on how we do it, I think nobody can question our passion and our determination to talk about policies, to talk about the things that matter, and to make sure that we can deliver for the society as a whole. Alan?
So you're all going to have to stop clapping soon, OK? But Alex,
stop when he smiles. Listen, it's interesting that I didn't use the word hate, but you both used it immediately. You jumped into it. The other thing about policy, you say, it is about policy. Well, in East Belfast, I live in East Belfast, I don't hear unionists saying to me, oh, this is about policy, this is about, we're talking about wider educational health issues. What I hear is, we're taking this seat back to unionism. the policy doesn't actually matter. And we're having a debate about what's good for East Belfast. And I'm saying, I live in it. I mean, I can show you where the blights are in this place, where the shops are closed, where the jobs are going, and nobody from either party seems to have given a damn about it in the past few years. I'm simply saying, I'm not hearing that debate. The only debate I'm hearing for both of you, and from both your supporters, is A, to take a seat back from unionism, or B, to stop the DUP getting the victory. That, to me, is not a normal political debate.
I have to say, Alex, I mean, and I'm sorry, I will cut in at this stage. You, as a political commentator, and this isn't about you or I, you, as a political commentator, are probably more in tune with these policy discussions than anyone else. Than anyone else. And whenever we had a canvasser, and I think she's in the room, whenever we had a canvasser talking to you on your doors, you received literature filled with policies that didn't say, let's take this seat back for unionism, but here's what a unionist can deliver for East Belfast. Now, I don't want people to leave this room or leave this auditorium thinking that it's about Naomi or it's about Gavin. It's about this constituency. And if you listen to what we say and give us the questions that you want to ask, give us the opportunity to fill you with hope and not fear. Give you the opportunity to fill you with aspiration and not desperation. Then I think you'll leave with it in spades.
Annie, do you want the last word before we move on?
Well, I do, because I think in reality there is a danger that because of the pact it does become the kind of two-headed beast that you've described. But we haven't been going to people and asking them to stop the DUP. Because that's not my agenda. My agenda is about creating an East Belfast where everyone feels comfortable, that is open and welcoming and liberal and tolerant. It's about taking East Belfast forward and being able to build on the successes we've had and being able to make a better space for everyone that will deal with the issues of economic blight in the constituency. There are parts of my constituency that I can go to and I can see that they are vibrant and thriving. We have cracked the issue, for example, of arterial roots regeneration in places like Ballyhackamore, where people largely feel safe. We haven't cracked it in other places because they don't. I want to see that success replicated in those more deprived communities where people will feel the benefit of success, feel the benefit of shared space, feel the benefit of living in a liberal and tolerant democracy. That's what I'm about. It's not about stopping anything other than the kind of sectarianism that we have witnessed in East Belfast that has been to our detriment. But I'm not about stopping the DUP. I'm about taking the constituency forward, and that's what all my literature has been saying.
Okay, I think, Alison, you're possibly going to come with a question that might mention East Belfast again.
Well, following on probably from what Alex said, I mean, people of East Belfast have been through a very dramatic time since the last election, at the centre of the flag protest, which is supposed to be traced back to those now famous 40,000 leaflets. I'll ask Gavin, do you regret your party's role in that? And from both of these, when you're actually on the doorsteps, how important is the issue of flags and emphasis and identity? And is that what people are concerned about? Or are you getting the feedback that they're more interested in policies such as education, economy, jobs, those sort of things?
Even dealing with the last point first, it is true to say that the decision by Belfast City Council, in my view, was retrograde. It was regressive. But that it evoked passion and emotion amongst people, some of whom, with regret, took to the streets, but many others, who were disappointed that it had come to this. And so you do hear it on the doors, and not at our invitation, and not at our request. You hear it on the doors because it does matter to people. It hasn't been forgotten, and that's not something that's that I focus on in literature. It's not something that I focus on in political life. People will remember in this room that I was the Lord Mayor of the city at the time. So whilst party colleagues were involved in distributing leaflets to indicate to people what was likely to happen with the Alliance Party and Sinn Féin and the SLP getting together that saw the removal of our union flag, I wasn't involved in that. But when we had a distressing time, and I say distressing time, you're right, distressing for people in East Belfast, distressing for Naomi personally, distressing for me personally in what we were trying to do, and that was standing up for the city at a difficult time. And I think if people are going to maturely and appreciate and reflect on what happened in 2012, there was a lot of hard work put in after the event to make sure that this a city, and East Belfast is a section of this city, which struggles so difficultly with an issue which raised community division, we worked hard to bring that to an end. We work hard to bring people back to make sure that whilst the city had been detrimentally impacted in vibrancy at Christmas and with retail and locally here in East Belfast, we worked hard to bring that to them.
But do you regret your party's role in distributing those protests in the situation? I mean, in this constituency now, the young people with a criminal record as a result of those protests that possibly wouldn't happen if it hadn't been dealt with differently by the unionist parties?
You're right, we do have people with those criminal records, and I have to say, the one thing that I didn't do was turn my back on people whenever they found themselves in that situation. But I did stand up and say that people shouldn't take part in flag protests. I did stand up and say that if people are aggrieved by the decision taken in Belfast City Hall, that the way to change that is through the ballot box and not through any other way. If people were disappointed, then they have to get encouraged to get involved in politics and make sure that in politics, politics works for them.
Okay, Naomi, do you want a couple of minutes to kind of talk about this? I mean, the question originally was around whether or not flags was regrettable, but there was also a question of do economics and education and the other policies actually come up more in the door than flags?
Well, certainly in the last election, the European election and the council elections, the flag was a significant issue on the doors for people. It was something that was being raised with us regularly. We haven't found that. We find that diminishing on this occasion. As we go door to door, I think people realise that there are bigger things at stake. But here's the thing. If people are genuinely unionist and really want to remain within the union, surely that is about values and beliefs rather than just about symbols. It is about the kind of society that you aspire to be part of. And unfortunately, we have a dichotomy in that some of those who are so protective of the symbols of unionism are so dismissive of the wider values that we see espoused across the UK in terms of inclusion, in terms of freedom, in terms of liberal principles and democracy. And so there is a genuine divide around this. I think the other issue with respect to the flags protests and what ensued, it had a huge impact on business. But what I haven't heard is a better solution. I haven't heard a better solution. Because for every person who passionately wants the flag to fly over City Hall 365 days of the year, there is another person who lives in this city, who has as much ownership over the city and its civic life, who wants the flag to fly not at all. Now, we have to find as a society a way of dealing with the fact that we govern a divided community. We have to do it in a way that respects the fact that we remain part of the United Kingdom, but also respects the fact that a sizable proportion of the people we represent don't. So a vision for unionism is not a sufficiently broad vision to be able to take Northern Ireland or indeed East Belfast forward. We need a vision that reaches beyond that. Not one that excludes unionists, not one that alienates unionists, but one that can reach beyond unionism to those who actually don't define their identity by a flag, or who wish that their identity were defined around another flag. They are citizens, they are people we represent, and we have to create the kind of tolerant democracy where their views are represented and are properly advocated for when it comes to parliamentary democracy. I think that's hugely important, and I think Belfast City Council, in those circumstances, did the only thing that they could do based on the advice they were given. But more than that, I believe they did the right thing.
Just briefly, a question for Gavin and then one for a very different topic. Gavin, your party leader, Peter Robinson, who obviously did hold this seat previously, when the Unionist Pact was announced, his response was pretty emphatic. He said, the only message to Naomi Long is dry your tears away, you're going out. Now, aside from issues of taste about that sort of statement, surely that is the wrong message to be sending. At a time when people increasingly are not coming out to vote and you need to encourage unionists in Belfast to come out to vote, surely unionists looking at that might say, why should we bother? It's already been decided.
It certainly hasn't been decided. The only decision that will be taken is on the 7th of May, and that's why I'm campaigning. And I'm out campaigning and I'm knocking doors and I'm talking to people and I'm building relationships across this constituency. So rather than put quotes from others to me, listen to what I have to say would be my response. I've given an interview, this is a Slugger O'Toole event, I've given an interview to Slugger O'Toole where I acknowledge that whilst Naomi and I might differ fundamentally on a lot of political issues, that she's a capable politician. I have no difficulty in acknowledging that, and I have no need to say anything other than put forward my views positively, challenge where necessary, but make sure that we're prepared to stand up for East Belfast and its people.
Thank you. And just very, very, very briefly, is that you trying to distance yourself from what your party leader said?
Because you certainly didn't endorse him. You left quite a gap there. Don't listen to what other people say. Listen to what I say.
Correct. Listen to what I say. Listen to what I say. Follow the campaign. Recognise the relationships that I'm building right across East Belfast and the warmth and the reception that we're receiving in East Belfast. Listen to what I say. Follow the campaign. You'll not hear comments like that from me.
You have a question for Diana.
Totally different topic. Some people in East Belfast clearly felt very strongly about the Alliance Party's decision in terms of the fly, but a totally separate issue, which probably another set of people, and although probably some across it, felt very strongly about, was your stance of gay marriage, equal marriage. That's not something, as far as I understand it, that was in your manifesto the last time that you ran. Is that something that you now regret, given that some of your party members, such as Trevor Lunn, have come out to criticise what the party did in endorsing that?
No, it isn't something I regret, because I made a decision that I believe was the right one. I actually believe that if the state is going to provide a service, which marriage is a service that the state provides, it should provide it equally to all of its citizens. And I believe that it is then a matter that churches should be protected in terms of doctrine and conscience to be able to make their own decisions about how they progress those issues. I want to see an open and a liberal and a tolerant democracy. And I believe in freedom of religion, and I think those two can be balanced. I believe in voting as I did in Westminster, we achieved that balance. I also believe that our party policy does, but I accept that there will be people in this society who are uncomfortable with that, and I respect their right to disagree. So Trevor Lunn is also a Westminster candidate in this election. It has not disadvantaged him that he took a different view to me. This is not about trying to persecute those who have a different opinion. It is not about trying to close down the debate or the discussion. But it is about taking a stand for something that as a party we believe is important, and that is one of equality. It is about treating people fairly and equally under the law, and ensuring that whilst I enjoy freedom of religion as a Christian, others with different religious beliefs enjoy that same freedom, and those with no religious beliefs enjoy freedom from religion. And for me, that's an important principle on which we can build a kind of tolerant, open society that I think we need to have if Northern Ireland is going to flourish, be an attractive destination for inward investment, but also is going to be able to do proper business within a UK framework where these things are taken as read. The idea that we are having, for example, debates around the gay blood ban in Northern Ireland is something that could severely hamper our ability as Northern Ireland politicians, and particularly in the DUP, to be able to have influence at Westminster. Because we've already heard when pushed, Andy Burnham, the health spokesperson, express concern about having to form some kind of allegiance with a party that opposes gay people ever being able to give blood. So we need to confront the reality that in doing so we diminish our influence and relevance at Westminster, and we make ourselves a place apart. And that is not good for Northern Ireland, and it is certainly not good for the people who live here in fear of things like homophobia and racism and other abuse.
In terms of what you said at the beginning, the Republicans haven't damaged Trevor Lunn and his particular kind of conscience, the folks that he took. Do you regret that it's not a firm party? It is a party policy, but you're then allowing people to kind of override it. Would you prefer that it was a uniform policy that everybody adhered to?
Well, it is a uniform policy, but in every party we will make decisions about where we put emphasis in terms of discipline. And what we were trying to do is convince the public that this is not something to be feared. I actually believe in this policy. And I want people to be confident that if they take a different view, they will not in any way be diminished or deprived of the opportunity to speak their mind. Now, if we go around and have a witch hunt internally in our own party against those who, for conscience reasons, take a different view, that sends out a very negative message to those in society outside. So we had two jobs to do. One was to deliver as many votes as we could in favour of equality, and the other one was to reassure those outside who were concerned about the impact that might have on their ability to freely express their views.
Okay.
And I think we got that balance. Not perfectly, no party does, but I think we got it about as right as we could.
A particular kind of Gavin comment too, because I mean, in your party, although some of the NLAs, maybe even some of the MPs, have slightly different views, the whip is much tighter, more tightly used, and actually people don't get to kind of say what their conscience is.
That's not true at all, Alan. I mean, we don't whip on these issues. There's no need to whip on these issues, and particularly in marriage. The view is very clear right across our assembly group, and that's from individuals who have relatives, sons and daughters who are homosexual, but that is it. There is no whip on those issues. I thought it was wonderful that Trevor Nunn, because of our position and the closeness of his position to ours, decided to include me in his election literature. He had a good photograph of me on the front page, and I'm glad
in the background. Where we would like you to be.
I hear it was said that that photograph was taken in the Park Avenue at an Alliance event. Actually, if you look at it, it's in the Long Gallery from about a year ago. This shows just how much effort has been put into that campaign and the literature altogether. I do want to make this point, because the difficulty I have, and I think it is right in an issue like this, that we are respectful of different views, is that when you get that subsequent mantra about raising equality and putting pressure on people who have an alternative view, I have an alternative view to Naomi, I'm right to hold it. I have every right to hold it. The problem for the Alliance Party is that the two MLAs that they have in East Belfast held the same view that I do, held a conscious view. And both of them were put under severe pressure to change their stance. One of them did, and one of them didn't. But they should never have felt that pressure.
Whereas I would have heard...
Both of them are sitting in the audience tonight, nodding no. Both of them are sitting in the audience tonight, and both of them are nodding no. And just to put it in context, Judith is now chair of the East Belfast Alliance Association, and it has not damaged her political career. It has not damaged Chris's political career. It hasn't damaged anyone's political career. And I think when people do that, it's about spreading fear and mistrust and making people fearful of what equality looks like. Well, I can tell you, an alliance, it's not an exclusive principle. It's one that actually brings people together.
Okay, we're going to take a kind of a
diet. Sounds good, but it wasn't born out in reality.
Okay, we're going to take a kind of a diet break for a second to swap a couple of mics, apparently. So.